98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up, 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadora.
Burnsy, what is going on?
Oh, Gambo, just everybody sending you flowers and get well cards and things of that nature. It'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, you're all right. You solid?
There's a lot of the high impact stuff I got to slow down a little bit on. I push my body so much, and so
yeah, we have expected to see you come in here in like a wheelchair today or something.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, you're all right.
I'm good. Yeah.
He's asked Jordan and myself to carry him in and out of the room wherever he has to go. So
well, that's only because
fine.
He wants to be treated like royalty in all
right,
fairness.
That's right.
True,
yeah.
True.
That has nothing to do with the leg.
No. That's nothing to do with the injured leg.
So it's like a throne with the handles, right? We have to
exactly.
Lift him and carry him in.
Yeah. Someone fanning him with giant palm leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
Intern Dan will be fanning him.
Chocolate-covered strawberries?
Admit it. That,
peeled grapes.
This is all kind of a secret fantasy for you, isn't it? To come into work like that, right? In a throne
and just have that
carried. Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Look at the glisten in his eye.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you can't see it at home, fine listeners.
It's the one thing that, like, okay, like, me and my wife, I was born in the 60s. She was born in, like, the late 80s. We have, like, decades of difference.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the way I grew up with certain things and the way she's grown up are completely different. So sometimes,
What are you referring to?
Just life. Just life things.
Okay.
Just, you know, total life things.
But you're
women
okay.
Today are different than women.
Oh,
from the 60s
as far as
and
like how much they dote on you.
On
is that what
much,
you're getting to?
On how much control they have, power they have. Yes.
The times they are changing. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. And look at you changing right there with them. Well, we're glad to hear you're okay. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
Kyler Murray is here.
He's here.
He's here.
He's here.
Here's Kyler.
Right? Cool Johnny Carson on here? What was that? No,
that's Jack Nicholson,
that's Jack Nicholson.
Doing Johnny Carson
here's
in The Shining.
Here's Kyler.
Here's Johnny.
Yeah. Oh, God. That
all
was
time great.
Was
all
that
time.
Not one of the greatest moments in movie history?
That was actually one of the greatest movies.
Here's Johnny.
One of the greatest moments in movie history
it
all
was.
Time. When he
it
smashes
was.
Through that door in The Shining.
And he puts his head in
and
there.
And he sucks his head through the door.
And he looks
door.
Like the greatest psycho that's ever walked the face of the earth.
Here's Johnny. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Here's Kyler. He's here. He's in town. The Cardinals avoided some of the potential awkwardness. Josh Rosen, the off-season workouts continued today. There was media availability with guys. There was no media availability with Josh Rosen. We'll talk about that in a second. You were the first to report last week, and you were credited by one of the national NFL guys as such, as reporting that this visit was going to happen.
Yes.
We thought it was going to happen later in the week. It happened a little bit earlier in the week, but
yeah,
he is here.
They were able to get him in. He is in today. He is in today. There's some, you know, Adam Schefter saying that him and his agent are visiting with the Cardinals. I'll continue to say that is incorrect. The agent may be here, but he is not visiting with the Cardinals. Kyler Murray will do this visit, and he is here today. Like, he's here today. It's not like scheduled for tomorrow. He's here now. Kyler Murray is here now. The visit is ongoing, and the agent is not involved in the process of the visit. And so, contrary to some of the reports that are out there, The agent is not with Kyler Murray at the Cardinals facility, and that's what I said in my my tweets today. If you follow me on Gambo 987, you know, that's basically what I said. Kyler Murray's agent is not joining him on the visit with the Cardinals. So he may be, and listen, he may be there for support. I'm going to get a hotel room. You know, if you need to talk about anything, well, I'm here. Look, he's the first pick overall. He's going to get $32 million contract, $24 million guaranteed if he's the first overall pick. The agent needs to be, you know, wants to be here for him, but he will not be meeting with the Cardinals brass. He's not going to meet with the, you know, with the GM and the owner and the assistant GM and the brass that will meet with Murray. The agent will not be a part of that.
It's interesting. I saw your tweet, and you and I have talked sporadically throughout the morning, and I thought a lot about the agent and whether he's here and whether he's not here. And man, so much of this story, so much of the Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray story has been reality and perception, okay? And the perception of the agent being here is vital in all of this, because there are some people who will perceive the agent's presence as a negotiation of a contract.
Right.
And if he's here for that, now just follow me, because I'm just speaking hypothetically here. I'm not speaking this as fact, because I know you're reporting that he is not accompanying Kyler Murray.
No, agents are not part of these visits.
So he's not a part of his visit. But if it's perceived that the agent is here with Kyler Murray, then some might start connecting dots and go, oh, Kyler Murray's going to be the number one pick. Agent's here to work the deal. Agent here is here to dot I's and cross T's and make this thing happen. Again, that's not reality, but in a world, especially in this world where media perception can turn into reality, you can see why the Cardinals, still wanting to keep their cards very close to the vest about this, don't want it known that the agent is here. Don't want that to be a part of the story, because it makes it look like Kyler Murray's their guy at number one, and that's something they want to avoid.
Can't control whether the agent wants to go visit Cliff Kingsbury, who's one of his clients. Can't control that. Can't control if he just wants to be here with his client and just be there just in case the client, you know, has any questions or anything. But what is not going to happen is that the agent is not going to walk into the Cardinals facility with Kyler Murray and sit down and go through the whole process with him. That's not going to happen. We're not going to have that's not the situation. The agent is not involved in the process of visiting with the Cardinals. It'll be Kyler Murray visiting with the Cardinals. He is here now. He's here. Okay. And we knew it was going to be this week. Wasn't sure what day it was going to be. So I always preface that by saying, I know he's coming in this week. We reported this last week, but we just weren't sure what day it is. But it is today. He is here today. And they'll go through the process. They'll spend the day with him, probably a little bit tomorrow, too, and then he'll be on his way.
Well, plus the agent's presence implies a sense of business. And if Kyler Murray's just there by himself without the agent, then that says more football. And that says this visit is more about football and about getting to know the football player and about seeing how the football player does when he's on the whiteboard and how the football player does. You know what I mean? If the agent's here, then it becomes a broader conversation about business and contracts and things like that. If you just want to get to know Kyler Murray, the football player, it's probably best not to have the agent in the room with him, because you just want to talk with him about football and see what he knows and all that sort of thing. It's fascinating. It'll be fascinating to see as we've talked about this visit, since you've known about it basically since the latter part of last week. It'll be really interesting to see how much internally, and we'll see if any of this leaks out, but how much of this changes the Cardinals' perception on Kyler Murray one way or another. How much this visit, you know, because I would think after this visit, it's time to start figuring out.
It's time to put the board together.
What you're going to do.
Yeah, it's time to start to look at the scenarios. One, keep Rosen, draft Bosa. Two, draft Murray, trade Rosen. Three, trade the pick and get what you can for it. And it's time to decide which of that scenarios is best. Which one is best for you, the Arizona Cardinals? So after this Murray visit is complete, you know, I think sometime within the next couple of days, they should really have a real good clear path to where they want to go and what they want to do with this first overall pick.
A lot of the players were made available today by the Cards with the offseason workouts. Again, Josh Rosen was not, and it's kind of understandable why. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Buda Baker says he's not paying any attention to the number one pick rumors.
For me, I'm not really a big media, like looking all that type of stuff. So for me, I've just been focusing on, you know, the team at hand. Josh is here. He's always been that great player. He's always been first. So I seen something on media like he was the first one in yesterday or something like that, which is, to me, is just nothing different. That's how he's always been.
Chandler Jones says the team has to ignore the noise.
Just block it out. Ignore the noise. You always have to ignore the noise. So it's not like anything. You know, you approach it just like another year. We have new faces on the team. We have a new coach. We have a whole new staff. And the biggest thing is impressing those guys, like I said last year, trying to impress the new coach.
And I just wonder too, and I understand that's the player's perspective, they absolutely have to be about that, but what if anything will the Cardinals even learn about Kyler Murray over these next 24 to 36 hours that they didn't already know?
Yeah, you just get to know the person. I mean, you get to know the character of the person. You spend more time with them than just the combine time. And you could go over film with him. You could go chalkboard with him. I mean, there's a lot of those things that you can pick his brain on what he's seeing in film, what he sees on the board, that type of thing. I mean, get a good idea of what kind of leader he is. So all of those things are what you go through. I mean, the medicals are done, the height, the weight, the 40 time. I mean, everything, you know, that you may want to know is done. If you got all this film on him, it's just more of a getting to know you. Just continue. I mean, this is like the third date, the fourth date. You're just figuring out if I want to go out with you full time. Like if I want to. You know, you get a couple dates with somebody, and then it comes to the point where if you really like the person, you go steady,
right?
And that's it. There is nobody else. It's just me and you. I made that decision. We've had 3 or 4 dates. Now I'm good. I don't need to see anybody else.
I got the Jet song, "Are You Going to Be My Girl," going through my head now. I can't get it out of my head now.
I'm thinking Happy Days. You go to Inspiration Point.
That's the difference between you and me. When you think about something like that, I think Jets, "Are You Going to Be My Girl," you go Happy Days. I mean, that's sort of where you and I are culturally.
You know?
This week, we are qualifying you for Cardinals on the Clock, the ultimate draft flyaway experience in Nashville. Text the word clock to 620-620. Listen every day this week at 745, 1245. Be listening today at 445 on this show for your name. You're going to have 9 minutes to call and claim your official Cardinals draft hat and a qualifying spot for the grand prize trip to Nashville during the NFL draft. You can register for this right now by texting clock to 620-620 and then listen all week long. It's the ultimate draft flyaway experience. It's presented by Cherish. Cherish 100% all natural cherry juice.
Making me want to try this cherry juice.
Sounds very good.
Every time
good.
You mention it, I'm like, man, I like cherries. I think I'd probably like the cherry juice. You
probably would. Josh Rosen has yet to speak with the media about all the rumors surrounding the Cardinals. His teammates certainly came to his defense today. You'll hear how next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Here's Johnny.
John Gambadoro and Dave Burns.
Who was that? I don't even know who that was.
That was Dan Le Batard. Remember when they read one of your tweets on the air like that? So I'm getting the feeling, and maybe this is how it was going to be all along, or maybe something will change in a couple of days. I have no idea. But I heard Vinny and Bickley talking about this when we were driving in together, and they kind of wonder if we're going to hear from Josh Rosen at all before the draft day, you know, for the Cards. Is Josh Rosen even going to be available to speak? Because today, not that today would have been the day to do it, but there was no media availability yesterday. The players who spoke today, David Johnson, Buda Baker, Chandler Jones, I think Robert Alford spoke today. There might be some others that I'm missing as well. Today would have been a really awkward day to have Josh Rosen speak with Kyler Murray being in the building for his visit,
right?
Obviously. But I do wonder if the Cardinals, out of, for lack of a better word, decency, given everything that's going on, just might not allow Josh Rosen to endure a Q&A with the media before this process resolves itself.
Yeah, so some players spoke, but not Rosen, right?
Some players spoke, but not Rosen,
yeah.
Correct.
Okay. That's
Chandler Jones, Buda Baker, Robert Alford, and David Johnson were the only ones that spoke to the media.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I have to think in some ways they're protecting him, making sure he doesn't say anything. Not that he would, I mean, but you know, you protect the process here. It's a, you know what, I'm not going to put you out there with the, you know what, and we know where all the questions are going to be. Nobody's going to ask you about your off season and how you cleaned up the oceans with 4Ocean or, you know, nobody's going to ask you.
People should ask him about
that.
They
should. It's a great charity. My wife is a big sponsor of that, 4Ocean. And he went and spent the day with them. But nobody's going to ask him about that. They're not going to ask him, hey, how is, you know, they're going to ask him about the speculation. You know, what are your thoughts on the Cardinals and the flirtation with Kyler Murray? Where do you want to get traded to if you're going to get traded? Do you think you're going to get traded? And it might be better just to avoid all of that. It might be better just to avoid all of it together and just like, look, we're not going to put you out there during a voluntary. So look, after the draft is over,
If he's still the quarterback, then you could speak with him. I mean, I'd probably do that. I mean, if you were in charge of media relations for the Arizona Cardinals, I might, you know, and your boss has come to you. Do you think it's wise for us to have Rosen talk? Yeah, probably not. There's always the chance that something could go wrong. I mean, we know what the questions are going to be.
Sure.
It's all going to be Kyler Murray, Kyler Murray, Kyler Murray. You know, do you think you're going to lose your job to Kyler Murray? Do you think you're going to get traded? Why? How come you showed up for voluntaries? Did your agent tell you not to show? It's all going to be like stuff that you probably, it's not going to be football stuff. It's not going to be like, how do you feel about working with a new coach? How do you feel like working with new offensive coordinators? What do you think about some of the new acquisitions? It's not going to be any of that. There are going to be no questions regarding what the Cardinals have done.
Now, his teammates spoke very highly of Josh Rosen. David Johnson, does Rosen put in the work?
Oh, yeah, he definitely did. You know, when he did come last year, I did talk, you know, to Sam and to Mike and those guys, and they said that they talked to him all the time, especially when he got the starting job. Mike told me that they're always talking about, you know, the playbooks, what he saw, try to understand a little more, especially since, you know, having to have the change of offensive coordinator last year. Mike told me that he was doing all he could.
Buda Baker, not buying it that Rosen isn't a good leader.
No, not at all. Not at all. He's been leading. He led us last year. Even when he was done on offense, when walking to the sideline, he would give us encouragement, go defense, all that type of stuff. So, of course, I still think he's that same leader.
Chandler Jones.
He handled himself like a quarterback, like any other quarterback would. He was a leader. I was impressed with how he spoke to the huddle. You know, I wasn't in the huddle all the time, but being in practice, you know, you hear what he's saying, and he was good at grabbing everyone's attention. So he was a leader for sure.
You know, and it's funny. I'm torn on this one a little bit, but really actually not that much at all. All right, the media guy in me, the talk show host guy in me, of course, I'd love to hear from Josh Rosen.
Absolutely.
I'd love to hear from Josh. I'd love to hear what he has to say about this. I'd love to look at, listen to his words, look at his body language.
Try to read him.
Try to read him a little bit.
Is this bothering you?
Yeah, exactly. The person in me understands giving the kid a break and not making him speak to the media. Because this, let's be honest, this time in Josh Rosen's life, it's not fun.
Do you not think the other teams in the league want to get a read on what Josh Rosen's
sure
saying, too?
I'm sure they do.
Listen, this is all part of the protecting the information, right? Protecting the process. Don't let anybody on to what you're doing. And the second that you let Josh Rosen talk, you don't think every team in the league is going to listen and try to decipher if Rosen knows anything?
Sure.
If Rosen's been told anything? I mean, that's why it's probably not worth it for them to put him out there and have him speak and do this big – eventually, when the draft is over, then let him speak if he's still here. But in the meantime, I don't know that anything good's going to come out of it because you know exactly what every question's going to be.
I think the only good that can come out of it is if Josh Rosen truly is at peace with everything that's going on and he can convey that message, then that's good for him because it makes teams look at him and go, oh, man, what a cool guy. He understands. He gets it. He understands the business of the NFL. It's good for the Cardinals because it keeps their leverage doors open depending on what they're going to do. I mean, I think
he's not a savvy veteran that's been in the league for 10 years.
He's
coming off his rookie season.
But he's a smart guy.
He's a smart guy. But he also has never been through this before. He doesn't understand this whole being traded after a year and my name's out there. And, you know, you're not sure what he's saying. He's a little bit of a wild card. You're not exactly sure. You can prep him all you want, but you're not sure what he's going to say. So you can't let him speak.
And the thing about, I want to say this about this too, is that the Cardinals normally are, and I'm not saying they're not being so in this case, they're good to us. They're good with the media. They get it. They understand availability.
Yep.
They understand all that stuff. They're very, very, very accommodating when it comes to these things. But man, the non-media guy in me understands not making Josh Rosen endure. I read reports today on Twitter. There were 30 media people waiting today, hoping that Josh Rosen would speak.
That's their job.
I'm not saying it's not. But there's a small army of people out there waiting to hear Josh Rosen. And the nice thing to do is, in some ways, spare him of that, because this has been, no matter how tough he's supposed to be and no matter how much of a professional athlete he's supposed to be and how he's supposed to understand this is part of the business, there is a part of this today of all days that probably sucks for Josh Rosen.
Right.
He's there working out, trying to be the leader of the Arizona Cardinals, and upstairs they're all talking to Kyler Murray. I mean, think about it.
I don't know if the timing worked out.
I don't know.
They were there at the same time. I just know that Murray is here. Murray's here. And, you know, the visit is it's going on. But I don't know, like, because they're there for 4 hours and they get there in the morning. It's possible that Murray came after.
That's unfair. I don't know.
I don't know if they were in the building at the same time. I don't know.
I don't know if there's crossover or not. But even if there isn't, you know, on the one day that he's going to speak to the media, it's the one day that Kyler Murray is in Phoenix to talk to the Cardinals. I understand. And yet the media guy in me would love to hear from him and just see, you know, try to read it a little bit, try to get a better understanding of where he's at with all this and how he feels about it. I'm sure, to your point, teams would love to see it too. Teams with other teams that are contemplating trading for him, if he's even available, would love to see that as well. What a complicated time over there, isn't it?
It is.
What an incredibly complicated time.
I bet you there's going to be just a sigh of relief when this whole thing is over. When this, and you don't, you know, it's a, you like, you're trying to hide something from all these people, and you're just trying to keep this secret and not let this person know and that person know, and you don't want Rosen to know, and you don't want other teams to know, and there's going to be a sigh of relief, like a big burden off your shoulders when this is done.
It's still a very small sample size, but we're 10 games in. What has Torey Lovullo learned about his Arizona Diamondbacks 10 games into the season? Our exclusive conversation every week with the manager is coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah Cazell, who, by the way, on the Burns and, was it your personal account or was it the Burns and Gambo Twitter account where you tweeted out video of Jordan Bird winning the Josh Rosen First to Work Award?
That was from my account, from but we retweeted account? From Burns and Gambo.
Okay,
yeah.
Congratulations, Jordan, on being a two-time winner of the Josh Rosen First to Work Award today.
Anytime you guys want to come at the king, just show up before me.
Best not miss.
What time you typically walk in the door?
The early hour of noon.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I don't think I'm going to be here as early as noon.
Mm. Yeah.
So I guess let's see how many days, months, or years before the streak is broken.
Oh, Jordan, I think
could have that Joe DiMaggio type streak.
Yeah. It could be.
Plus, we have like a state of the stations.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and then try to beat him in on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's today's poll question, Sarah? Because we've got Torey Lovullo coming up here in a moment.
That's right. So we'll make it fast. On the last day of the Suns season, that would be today, who is the team MVP? Not named Devin Booker. Right now, 64% of our voters, not surprisingly, say it Kelly Oubre Jr. 23% went for DeAndre Ayton, 11% for Mikal Bridges, and a solid 2% for Rashawn Holmes.
Did you see that Kelly Oubre trademarked Valley Boys?
I did.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Got the trademark approval on that. That's funny stuff. All right, Sarah, you can find that Twitter poll question on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page.
Your exclusive home of the D-backs. Diamondbacks. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. D-backs manager Torey Lovullo joins Burns and Gambo to talk D-backs baseball. Presented by the Negrete Law Firm. For an experienced personal injury attorney, contact us at azhometownlawfirm.com.
Our exclusive opportunity to talk with the manager of the Diamondbacks every week, every Tuesday at 2:30. Torey Lovullo joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. They've got the Rangers in town for a brief two-game set starting tonight. Good afternoon, Torey, and congrats on taking 2 of 3 from your former employer. I'm sure that had feel nice a little bit, right?
Beat those communists.
It felt really good. Any win's a good win, but obviously known as world champs. And we did that for Gambo, too. I know how he feels about the Sox, so we dug down about as deep as we could to win 2 out of 3.
That's good. That was good. It was it was a great opening night. I mean, you know, we were down there, and the crowd was amazing. There were a lot of Red Sox fans, but there's the way you guys pounded them. I mean, it was fun. We were taunting them as they were walking out of the building, or I was taunting them as they were. Why are you leaving so early? Where are you going? I always get a kick out of that. But overall, good series. I mean, you didn't play well against the Dodgers. I mean, we were talking about how many home runs you gave up, how many walks you had, the starting pitching wasn't going deep. But, you know, it's so early in the season. The last two series against the Padres and against the Red Sox, you guys did a lot of things right, especially starting pitchers going deeper into games.
Well, exactly. And it feels like I haven't talked to you guys in about it for over a month, but I know last week we spoke a little bit about this. Look, the Dodgers are swinging the bat extremely well. They were hot. They banged it around, and they beat us. We felt like we had a chance to salvage that series, and we didn't cash in and do what we were supposed to do. But I think we learned some lessons. We learned some early lessons for what we got to walk through as a team to keep pressing on and learning the new normals. And what we got out of that is that we're prepared. We're a good team. Even though we didn't win that final game, we thought we were right there despite the two ugly losses. And then we went into San Diego with an upstart team, and then this final series here, the last series with the Red Sox, we felt like we learned a lot about ourselves. We did things the right way. We played the game the right way, and we're a good baseball team. And that's what came out of it for me, and I feel like the players felt the same way as well.
What were a couple of the things that you felt like you learned about your baseball team?
Well, to be totally transparent, you know, I was thinking the same thing every fan was, and the same thing you guys were, the same thing in the front office was. You know, we're missing some key components here, and how are we going to fill those voids? And what's our team going to look like when we walk into these series and these games? Especially, you got the defending world champs, you got the runner ups. And what's that all going to look like? And how are we going to compete? Are we going to look like we got staggered and knocked down into the corner and we didn't get back up? Or are we going to find ourselves, get our balance, and start to deliver some big punches? Our team's tough, and our team is ready and prepared, and they believe in themselves, and that's what I got out of it.
There's a lot of positives, but let's just talk about a couple of the negatives. Hirano's three innings. Matt Cook right now hasn't really thrown the ball well. I mean, your bullpen is a big part of your ability to have success. Mm-hmm. Are there any concerns this early in the season with those two guys?
Not really. It's still early. Like I was telling you guys with our starting pitching after the LA series, that it takes a little while sometimes to get kick-started. It looks ugly if it's one bad outing, and all of a sudden it was magnified because it was two or three in a row. We know that we have some players, pitchers, that aren't necessarily getting off to the most complete starts, and that's just part of the game, and it's hard. So, yes, I would love it if Hirano or Cookie were throwing the ball well, but they're going to continue to get those opportunities. They've been proven. They've done it before, and we're not going to just run away from them overnight. We want to make sure that we look at them, we examine it, and look, if this is happening and it's August, of course, we're going to make some adjustments, or maybe a little bit before that. But for right now, we believe in these guys.
You've got Avila now on the injured list. You've got two catches. You bring up LeCastro, speedy outfielder. Do you see yourself just staying with the two catchers until Alex is off the injured list? Does that make the most sense?
Well, we've gone through about two or three different scenarios. LeCastro obviously is a very capable outfielder and playing all three spots. I might start to rotate some of the guys who've been playing every day out there, such as Adam Jones and David Peralta, in and out of the lineup. So I think LeCastro being here is gonna help us in a bunch of different ways. A, he's a really good baseball player and deserves to be here. And then B, it's going to give us the opportunity to get some guys off their feet. So we're constantly discussing that. We're trying to figure it out. When you have one of your guys go down, as the way Alex did, you try to anchor and hold it down until he gets back. And how that lays out today may not lay out the same way tomorrow. But we walk through a bunch of those different features, and we try to make it work for what we're doing right now. So right now, LeCastro will be here and possibly get some starts.
Our exclusive conversation with Torrey Lovello every Tuesday at 2:30 here on the Burns and Gambo Show. D-backs and the Rangers tonight, 6:40 first pitch. One of the takeaways I think the fans were kind of talking about over the weekend, other than taking two or three from the defending World Series champs, was the night that Carson Kelly had on Saturday night with the walk-off hit and the three RBI, and some fans kind of having conversations about, should he get more at bat? Should he get more playing time? I know the three catch, and it's kind of on hold right now with Alex's injury, but do you foresee Carson Kelly getting more at bats, more playing time in the near future? I see he's not in your lineup tonight. Do you see that happening sometime in the near future that he gets more of those looks?
Possibly. First of all, we are super excited about what Carson's done for us. We targeted him. He was one of the key features in the trade that sent away Paul. So we love the fact that he's here and wearing this uniform, and we want to make sure that we're getting everything out of him that we possibly can. And it's part of the process for him that he's going to get integrated. He's done a great job with that. And young players, you know, you don't want to force them into every situation. We want to make those growing pains as short and as quick as possible. So that's the answer I can give you right now. But listen, he could find his way into the lineup and bang it away and be our guy at some point. We feel that. We believe in that. But we're going to follow this process. We believe in the system that we have with our catchers. Alex has been swinging the bat extremely well. So we're missing him. But so for the time being, while he's out, yeah, you're going to see Carson get some more starts, and we feel like he's fully capable and ready to handle that. But we want to make sure we follow the process in which we set out, not at the beginning of spring training.
I watched Merrill Kelly very closely, you know, in that outing. And, you know, fastball was up around 93. I thought the changeup was really good, had a lot of hitters off stride. Pitched a hell of a game. I mean, he gave up the one home run, the solo homer to Moreland. The only big mistake he made, didn't walk anybody. I loved the control. I thought the command was good. I mean, you know, you watch this more closely than we do. What were you seeing with him?
Yeah, it was a pretty good outing. I'll tell you that. You give up that type of run and lose the game 1-0. It's heartbreaking. But he didn't back down off of his stuff. He was pounding the zone with a fastball, changeup, and a breaking ball combination. But I thought he had a really good feel for where his fastball was going, and it was all set up off of that. So once you command that, and he was up at the top of the zone when needed to be, but working the edges, he had a little cut on his fastball when he needed it. So it was a complete effort. And I've always maintained that when a major league pitcher feels it on a night like that, the way that Merrill did, you're going to have a tough time scoring some runs. Just unfortunately, we couldn't get him any run support, but those are the outings that we'll take. We're going to count on those. We know that he's fully capable of that and continuing to build. The first outing of spring training, there was a little bit of discomfort with the mound and the baseballs being a different size from where he'd come from overseas. But he's done a great job of adapting and making pitches. You can see where that's landed him now.
The guys seemed really, for lack of a better word, bothered by that bullpen game that they had to face on Sunday. I think Jerrod Dyson was the only position player you had who got to see the same pitcher twice. You like your team's ability to adjust the second or third time you see a starting pitcher?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, they threw the whammy on us. We were thinking that could happen. We knew Velasquez probably wasn't going to go deep into the game. We had him projected for anywhere from 35 to 50 pitches, which is about where it was. So we were prepared for that. We did all of our work on the relievers the same way. But you know, get into the rhythm of a game, and it's very traditional. When you start to see a starter the second and third time, you start to rev your engine, start to push on a little bit harder. If things start to move in a good direction, you know what you're going up against. But in this case, it was changing. So maybe it's something that we learned and we're going to grow through so it doesn't happen again. I don't know how many more times that may happen. I know everybody's been asking me about the opener and different styles of bullpen usage. So we got to get used to that. So this obviously didn't work out, but we'll learn something from it and push on.
Torrey, we appreciate the time. Best of luck tonight against Texas and then against San Diego. We will talk to you next week.
I'll look forward to it. See you guys. Bye-bye. Right.
Torrey Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, joining us. Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter, Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. That's a 640 first pitch. You'll hear it on ESPN 620 tonight. Ticket window Tuesday. It's today. It's presented by Arizona Central Credit Union, giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to see the D-backs take on the San Diego Padres this Saturday, and the first 20,000 fans will get an Archie Bradley bobble gnome. Not a bobblehead, a bobble gnome. Listen at 4:15 this afternoon for your chance to win. Last year, they were the punchline of the NCAA tournament. One season later, they are the national champs. Does it erase what happened this time last year? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Virginia suffered the humiliation of becoming the only team in the history of the NCAA tournament to lose to a 16. We thought it would define them. In some ways, it still might. I don't know if that stain ever comes out. I don't know if you ever get that out. But boy, last night they did everything they possibly could to get as much of it out as they could.
I think unless you were on that team last year, and you graduated and you're not on the team this year, yeah, that will never leave you. But if you were a part of both teams, then I think it's gone. You just won the national championship. The first one in the history for Virginia basketball. I mean, they've been around for 114 years. They've been into 23 NCAA tournaments, 7 Elite Eights, 3 Final Fours. Yeah, you know what? You may be remembered for that loss, but you're also going to be remembered for that win. You won the national championship. You won it all. I mean, adversity overcome. It just makes the story better. Yeah, we got knocked out in the first round by, you know, we were one seed, but then the next year we came back, we won it all. That sounds great.
I mean, that sounds unbelievable. But I'm sure there are, and I didn't look at this, but I'm sure there are, you know, a couple of guys that were on the team last year that aren't on the team this year.
Well, I think there are a bunch of the guys who are, yeah, who I mean, are on the team.
Yeah, those guys don't get that enjoyment. They don't get to, they didn't win a national championship. They got beat by a 16 seed.
Yeah, I think that, look, I'm not trying to take anything away from the national championship, anything at all. It was a great accomplishment, especially how they did it. And props to them and Texas Tech for providing us what was one of the more entertaining national championship games we've seen in a number of years, especially since we had such low expectations going into it, given the defensive reputation of both teams, and we thought it was going to be kind of ugly and make sure you bet the under and all that stuff. It was a terrific, entertaining, compelling game in the second half and in overtime. I'm just saying that no matter what, if you were a part of that number one seeded Virginia team that lost to the 16, I don't care how many championships you win, that stain never all the way comes out. It never does. It will always be there. It will always be there.
Yeah. You know what? It shouldn't come out. It's part of the story.
It's part of the story.
It's part of the story. It makes it even sweeter.
That's, I agree. It's part of the story.
Yep.
We lost to a 16 seed. And you know what? We came back the next year and we won the whole
damn
thing.
Yeah.
We won the whole thing. Now, listen, it's a terrible story if they had lost to Gardner-Webb or lost to Oregon or even lost to Purdue and they get knocked out. Oh, they won a couple of games. But the fact that they won the whole thing, yeah, again, it's part of the story. Is it a stain? Okay, yeah. They've got a stain on their shirt, but that shirt now is covered up by a national championship Virginia.
That's a good
shirt.
Way of looking. That's a very good way of looking at it.
That's what it is.
Tony Bennett after the game.
I never thought of myself being a national championship coach. I wasn't even going to really get into coaching. I wasn't crazy about it. I loved playing. And then, you know, I saw my dad's team go to the Final Four. I was a volunteer manager and I got into it. I love the young men. I love the game. But it's not my end-all, be-all. I think there was a bigger plan going on here, and I wasn't needed, but I was used in it, and I hope that, you know, it's a message for some people that there can be hope and joy and resiliency.
But one of the classiest coaches I've ever heard speak. Just a class guy. The other guy, Beard, too, from Texas Tech. Man, that guy was a super class act.
Oh, I've got
the way he gave credit to Virginia and everything. That guy was amazing.
Just told him I loved him. And, you know, our relationship's just getting started. I'll be at those guys' weddings one day, and hopefully when their kids get born, and do everything I can to talk them out of getting into coaching so they don't ever feel like this. But, you know, I just love those guys.
Yeah, I mean, that was classy stuff by Chris Beard.
Well, he said, you know, there's some great future fathers in there. Yep. There's some great future husbands in there. One of the kids, I can't remember which one it was. I was watching it, but they didn't show his name on his jersey. But he was talking about, man, I wanted to leave a legacy. I wanted to win. I wanted to leave a legacy. And then somebody asked him, like, do you not think that you left a legacy? And he's like, nobody remembers second place. Like, nobody remembers who finished in second. Those kids were devastated. And I got to the point, I was tweeting last night as I was watching the game. Man, I really don't want either one of these teams to lose. I'm going to feel terrible because it was such a great game. And both teams were playing with so much heart that I said, I'm going to feel bad for whoever loses this game. I'm going to feel terrible for whoever loses it.
Tech twice came back from down 10 in that game.
Yeah.
So there was an opportunity. There was, I know a lot of people today, and I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are about it. They're glad the replay exists.
It's terrible.
But
it's awful.
There are a lot of people who think that it's just getting overdone now.
That's honestly one of the most ridiculous calls that you could ever imagine.
Vince Murata today called it the Zapruder film. I mean,
we looked at that
for 5 minutes. Did it go off his pinky?
It doesn't matter.
Brush off his pinky?
He was dribbling the ball. The other kid knocked it away. It has to be Texas Tech's ball. This is so ridiculous. He looked it in. Yeah, of course it rolled off his hand because the other guy knocked it away. He knocked it away. I mean, it should never. That should never be Virginia's ball. It should never be. Guy's dribbling the ball. A guy comes in and, by the way, did they not call the foul? Do you see how badly he got fouled by Guy?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Guy slapped him across the whole front of his body.
Yep.
They don't call a foul. That was ridiculous. Nobody's even mentioning that. He got slaughtered out there. I mean, it was a gigantic foul that they missed. And then, of course, the guy knocks the ball out of bounds. Anywhere, in any pickup game, in anywhere you ever play basketball, that's Texas Tech's ball. The guy knocked it out of bounds. He slapped it away. You're gonna rule that when he hit the ball, he hit it, and because the other guy's hand was kind of still on it when he hit it, that it was kind of off his pinky? I mean, I honestly think that that's ridiculous. That should not be a call. That should have been Texas Tech's ball. And anywhere, in any playground in the country, that's Texas Tech's ball. The replay right there, that's the negative of replay. That's the negative of it.
It can be,
that was a big part of the game.
It can be overused. There's no doubt about it. Now, I saw the replay just as much as you did and just as much as everybody did. It sure did look like it went off his pinky. You know, it sure did look like in the super, super, super slow-mo that you could see it kind of graze off the pinkies. But was it conclusive? Was it
But it shouldn't
sure?
be.
And I understand your point. No, I understand exactly your point.
Of course it grazed off his pinky. The other guy hit the ball out of his hand.
If we start hyper-analyzing every single play, you're going to in super slow motion. Man, the whole thing is just going to take forever. And I was really torn about it because I think at the end of the day, they got it right.
I don't.
But at what cost? Well, no, it went off his pinky. They got it right, but I understand what you're saying. He was the last guy to touch the ball. He was the last guy to touch the ball. But in that context, in that setting, at that time, given what we know about basketball, should it have been even reviewed? You know, I mean, the guy slapped it away.
I understand reviewing it, but you have to understand the guy knocked the ball out of his hands and knocked it out of bounds.
Yeah.
And if you're going to review that, can you not see the fact that guy slammed him with a foul right before that? Like, how do you not call the foul and then you give the ball? Texas Tech was down two with the ball in overtime, a minute remaining. That was literally the game right there.
Say this about Virginia. Elite Eight. They were down by three to Purdue with 5 seconds left in the game.
That was the craziest ending of any game this year.
Final four, they were down to Auburn by four with 17 seconds left in the game and won the championship
game. Three free throws at the end of the game on a foul.
They were down three to Texas Tech with 12 seconds left in the game. That's your national champ. Who were on the ropes.
Two overtime games.
Not once, not twice, but three times with under 20 seconds to go. And they found a way to win a title.
By the way, highest scoring championship game since 2000 for everybody that was going to bet the under on the defense. And the last time that a team played two overtime games to win a national championship was the U of A.
Phoenix Suns are in the process of hiring a new front office member, but a story about their past is raising some questions about, go figure, how the organization is run. We'll explain next on the Burns and Gambo Show.